Vegas lights shine bright, bad boys sitting pretty. Michael Steve Lobb running things in Sin City. Podcast blazing truth, rhyming hard and witty. Three kings on the mic, Vegas life gets gritty. Matt Michaels dropping bombs, quick wit, no filter. Sin City's own, blending gold with the silver. Steve taking notes, every word's a thriller. Rob's on the tracks, beats cold like a chiller. Bad boys a podcast, raw truth they broadcast. Speaking facts so fast, haters coming dead last. Las Vegas legends, three amigos top class. Mike in hand. Setting fire, never outclassed.
Welcome, everybody, to the Vegas Bad Boys podcast and the Forbidden Door 2026 recap and rant. I am Sin City Steve, and today I'm being joined by Red Jed, co-host with me on the Sin City Indie Report. Red Jed, how in the actual hell are you after that show,
bro? Oh, brother, what a fucking show this was. I'm still recovering. It's been a day later. To be honest, I didn't get the whole show in all in one shot. So I had to take tonight to watch the rest of it. And I am glad I did. What a phenomenal show this was, especially the top and the bottom of the card. Three matches at the start of the show, three matches at the end of that show, and even the three matches of the pre-show. We'll get into it, but boy, this was a spectacular card from AEW. I know we went off last month too on Double or Nothing, but this one to me was a little bit more of a surprise at how top notch, how elevated this show was.
Yeah, man, it's astounding to me because, you know, realistically, these Forbidden Door shows, you and I know a thing or two about them. You know, we might as well just throw the credentials out there. Right. We were both at the first ever Forbidden Door show in Chicago. Absolutely. And we've been fortunate enough to be at several of these shows now. And it's a very cool concept. One could say that it's been kind of suffering with diminished returns, just because that Forbidden Door has been kicked wide open, and it's not like as if there's even a door there anymore.
Right.
But the thing that I can say is this show absolutely delivered. The AEW stuff was top notch. The Forbidden Door stuff was also top notch. And we'll obviously break down every single match, kind of break it all down, go into all the fun stuff, what we took away from it. I do want to say thank you to everybody for hanging out with us tonight. We are currently live on YouTube, Twitch, and on Facebook. So all of those platforms, definitely appreciate each and every one of you guys hanging out. Blast your comments in that box. We'll get it on the show here. And yeah, this has been a polarizing show. You yourself, Jed, actually mentioned one of the biggest talking points about the show, and that was the show length. This show, just the main card, actually was 5 hours in length.
Yeah.
5 hours long, which is fucking insane.
Yeah. Then you had another 45 minutes of the pre-show, if not longer. And yeah, I mean, we're talking 6 hours in its entirety.
Yeah, it was a marathon. But, you know, there's only one way to recap that stuff, and that's just to dive in head first. And as you can see, we've got the match graphic up here, the full collage. So, we're going to get started with the pre-show. Excellent work by the graphic design team, by the way. Really love the format and the motif that they used. So excellent stuff. Let's talk about what went down on the pre-show, and it all kick-started with a match that was announced like 20 minutes before the show. I didn't even know that this was going down. So Drilla Maloney picking up the win in a pretty convincing fashion over Daniel Garcia of the Death Riders. This set the tone for how this show was going to be. Excellent stuff. I think Maloney has a great look. And I think that it's good to have these types of guys on the show that, quite frankly, would fit in very nicely in AEW should things ever change with his status with New Japan. So giving fans a bit of a, you know, a taste of what realistically could be a new talent to them. That's what this show's all about, man. What'd you think about this one?
Yeah. Yeah. He could fit in just easily with the dogs, you know, at a later date. And I think, yeah, this was actually a surprisingly better opener than I even thought it would be. When I heard the names, I thought, oh, this is intriguing. But I, you know, I thought for an opener of the pre-show, the buy-in, this was well above average. I wouldn't call it, you know, like one of the best matches of the card or anything like
that. No, not at all.
But by all means, as far as standards of the buy-in go, this was well above the average. And a nice showcase for Gerald Maloney as well, who's going to be in that G1 coming up very soon here, just in a week or two, it kicks off. So I think this was also a nice kind of nod to New Japan. Like, here, we're going to get one of your talent on the show. We're going to put him over real strong right from the start to establish that we're invested in this tournament just as much as New Japan is.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, from there, we had the second of our three pre-show matches, the buy-in matches, as we found out who the sixth member of that Survival of the Fittest match is going to be this coming Wednesday on Dynamite, as it was Sky Blue taking on Micah from Stardom. And to be honest, dude, I thought for sure that Sky was going to go over here. I was pleasantly surprised. Micah had a great showing here. And again, a Stardom talent picking up the win. Granted, both, you know, Maloney and Micah picking up the wins via the pre-show and the buy-in. You know, one could make a comment about how, you know, something may have, you know, match order should have been different or whatever. I don't put any stock into that whatsoever. This should have been on the pre-show. The Maloney Garcia match should have been on the pre-show. Saw some online chatter about people complaining, as always, that New Japan, Stardom, CMLL didn't really, you know, come out on top on anything major in this show. And I completely get that understanding. But at the same time, let's be real here. Your home audience is AEW. So I understand why the match outcomes were the way that they were, and that all, you know, all of that petty bullshit to the side, this again was a solid match and in the second spot on the buy-in.
Yeah, man. I thought both women looked great in this one. And, I hear you with that sentiment on that, but I mean, I kind of look at the overall card and you had talent like, for instance, Shota Umino.
Yes.
Looked great in there and was put over very strong in that match. And even a nod in the post-match. We'll get to that later. So, you know, I feel like Stardom talent also were showcased pretty strong. Yeah. You know, the whole storyline with Tekla, I thought that was well done on this show too. So I don't really feel like any promotion got lost in the dust. On the contrary, I thought going into the show, I thought maybe – a lot of the other promotions were being a bit devalued, but I thought given what happened on the card in the matches themselves, I thought really everybody really came off pretty damn good. Given the circumstances of the layout of the card, I thought everybody looked strong promotion wise. And it was kind of a win-win on all involved in this card. I just felt from top to bottom, it just really delivered. And even in the pre-show with this match, this was, well above the norm again. I'll repeat it just like the first one, well above the norm. And yeah, I thought as just with you, Sky Blue was going over, but we do have a Stardom talent and a CMLL talent coming up for the Survival of the Fittest on Wednesday. So nice distribution there for sure.
That's a great point. And, you know, I to be honest, I didn't even think about it at the time. And now that you're saying that, yeah, having the representation with Persephone being in that Survival of the Fittest match as well, and Micah having that presence there too. Yeah, it makes sense. I completely get it. And speaking of Stardom talents, or in this case, former Stardom talents, our third match on the buy-in featured the Divine Dominion, Lena Cross, and Megan Bain taking on the CMLL team of Olympia and Thunder Rosa, who, quite frankly, has had a bit of a career resurgence since she has been doing stuff with CMLL. I think that she is getting to the point where she is close to where she was when she caught all of the buzz in her world championship reign in AEW. So I think that she's getting better and better and more acclimated in the ring. Obviously, she was sidelined for a long, long time. So it's great to see the chemistry that she has with Olympia, and quite frankly, that those two women have with the Divine Dominion.
Yeah,
this was a solid match. But again, your champions go over extremely strong as Divine Dominion pick up the win with that double choke slam on Thunder Rosa.
Yeah, but again, like a really strong showcase for a CML talent here. Olympia thought came across really well in this one. And I feel like they put it to the champs more than we normally see. Maybe IJ was another team I could think of that came close. So we're inching closer and closer to something more competitive overall coming up against Divine Dominion.
They're planting those seeds. I'm telling you, the Brawling Birds are winning those fucking tag titles.
I think that's where they're going to go it all in.
That's what makes the most sense. So obviously that pre-show, the buy-in, was a fun hour before the 5-hour marathon slog. But I'll be bluntly honest, man, this opener was one of the more fun openers that I've seen in quite some time. You had El Sky Team versus the Young Bucks versus the Unbound Company. So CMLL representation and New Japan representation. And quite frankly, I think I made the comment to you as soon as I saw that this match was announced. Yeah, Titan's eating the pin, which sure as shit he did. Yeah. But, you know, here we are. The Young Bucks pick up the win. Honestly, I thought this one was going to be given to El Sky Team because we all know how Mystico has had one hell of a 2025, but also a great 2026 so far.
Yeah, and the fact that they just won the Ring of Honor tag titles.
Yes, two nights before this show.
Two nights before. I guess the sign maybe with this finish was that the tag titles weren't on the line.
Yes.
Which may have signaled, okay, we're probably going to get somebody else going over. But Mystico nor Dorada took the fall at all. You know, I don't expect it right as a rebound to this, but I would love to still see a Bucks and Sky Team just one-on-one rematch for, you know, or like follow-up for the Ring of Honor tag titles. I don't know if it'll happen or not. I think there's other destination points we'll get to, but boy, this was fun, a great opener, real high energy. The pace was unfucking real. The crowd.
The crowd was so hot for this.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Oh man.
And they love that. And
San Jose is a Lucha friendly city. They love Lucha Libre. This was a absolutely perfect way to start the show.
It sure was. It was a win-win in every sense. And the crowd loved Mystico's entrance. They ate that up. This was just, thinking comparatively to other AEW pay-per-views, even this year, this opener, and we've had a lot of hot openers on AEW pay-per-views, but this one may have taken the cooker of the top of the top. Because it really was just all out of salt on your senses from start to finish.
It was a lot of fun. I throw out that word a lot, but genuinely, this was an absolute spot fest in the best way possible.
Yes.
Not everybody's cup of tea, but this is what an opening match should do. It got the crowd into it in a hurry and really set the tone for what the main show was going to look like. It absolutely agreed. I would like to see Sky Team versus the Bucks. That's really intriguing. But obviously, like what you mentioned, I think they have, some plans for them in August. So I don't see them losing between now and then. Obviously, the Bucks picking up the win with what used to be called the Meltzer driver and then the TK driver. Yeah. Now it doesn't have a name, evidently. So, they just, It is what it is.
Exactly. They'll figure something out eventually, I'm sure, with it. So yeah,
most definitely. But following up on hot on the heels of that was a technical showcase. And a match that they gave plenty of time to. They gave him 26 and a half minutes to Zack Sabre Jr. and Kenny Omega. And you know what? These guys used all 26 and a half minutes perfectly.
Yeah, I
this
love
was
it.
The pace was great in this one.
Yep.
You know what you're going to get when those names are mentioned. You know what's going to happen when you see a Zack Sabre match. And you know what's going to happen when you see a Kenny Omega match and put the two together. Yeah, this fit the bill, to say the very least.
It sure did. And this is another example of, okay, the New Japan guy didn't go over, but you can't tell me that Zack Sabre Jr. didn't come off looking excellent in the follow through of this match. I mean, he's always just a top tier talent that just, when he's in with another guy like an Omega or other athletes like that, they're taking it to a whole other level. And this was just another, it was a little bit of a style shift and clash a little bit in some ways, but this was a good thing in this one. It didn't hinder the match or anything. It was more of they complemented each other really well.
Yes.
And a laid out really strong match. I just thought this, and again, also with Omega, and Zack Sabre being at that level, that caliber of like either guy really would deserve a shot at the world championship. Well, that takes Omega to that next step now, and we'll see where they're going to go with it. Is anybody's guess going into Wembley, but will we see something with Omega challenging for the title before All In? Will we, what's going to happen? Is anybody's guess, but I feel like it's coming.
Yeah. It absolutely is. And you know, Kenny has thrown out the word several times in his promos, and obviously AEW Redemption is taking place July 26th from the Bell Center in Montreal, Quebec, Canada.
Yep.
So, yeah, put two and two together. I think we know where this is headed.
Yep.
I am intrigued what the fallout of that match is going to be as we kind of – you know, get everything set for Wembley, which, you know, all roads lead to Wembley Stadium. You got to love that.
And curious also what they could do. You know, they'll do something with Zack Sabre Jr. in Wembley. They better. So where that could go is anybody's guess, even to roll back a little bit. What would they do? What are they going to do with Mystico? Will he be there? Will some of these other talents that were on the show from other promotions, will they make an appearance at All In? I hope so.
I hope. It would make sense if they did, you know, and it would cement that legacy and that partnership that we've had for so many years now. And that I think that we as wrestling fans have, I don't want to say taken for granted, but we just assume that it's going to be there at this point. So, bring some of those guys to Wembley, give them some spots on the card. I'm not saying to prioritize outsiders over your main roster of talent, but there is room, as we well know from years past with Wembley and how they tend to do things.
Yeah, do the gauntlet gimmick where, you know, you don't really have a lot of names, talked about prior. So these could all be surprise entrants. Could definitely see something like that come down. So
absolutely. And just to put a button in Omega and Sabre, Omega did pick up the win with the One-Winged Angel, of course. Thankfully, that finish is being relatively protected. We'll see what happens August 30th with that finish, though.
Exactly, yeah.
We'll see about that.
Yeah,
right. But moving on, we've got the Continental Championship on the line, the first of our major title matches on this main show. The AEW Continental Champion, Jon Moxley, successfully defending his Continental Championship over Bandido. And, this one went 18 minutes, so not nearly as long as Omega and Sabre. But this one was pretty interesting because we saw Moxley turn heel during this match. and rip the shit out of Bandito's mask. So much so, I'm pretty sure that we saw all of Bandito's face.
He got a little overt with the ripping of that mask.
He got a bit carried away.
A little too much, yeah. If it wasn't for the blood, we'd probably have a real good look at his face. I have to say, this match, going into it, I was kind of lackadaisical about it. I'm like, okay, this is Bandito. Yeah, he's kind of a CML talent too. Yeah, it's on paper, the match sounds okay. I was a little kind of like, hey, put in Mox with like a New Japan talent or something like
that. Here's the thing is the original planned match was supposed to be John Moxley versus Callum Newman.
Oh, really? I did not know that. Okay. Yes. Interesting.
Because obviously Callum Newman is, the leader of United Empire.
Yeah.
And there's the interplay with Will Ospreay as well.
Right. He might be injured as well. I think
so. Yeah. Callum Newman got injured against Yota Tsuji at Dominion. Yeah. So that kind of left TK and everybody involved, quite frankly, with a kind of a shotgun response of, oh shit, who are we putting in there with Moxley? But yeah, I think that this match over exceeded my expectations to say the very least. It was a good match and honestly a bit of a change of pace from everything else that was on this show up to this point. You did just have a heel being a heel. And it's great that Moxley can play babyface. He can play heel and do both at an extraordinarily high level. So expertly done. Bandito is fucking special, man. This guy, the things that he can do in that ring, quite frankly, someone of his stature and body type shouldn't be able to do what he does. Right. And I think that's part of the biggest draw is, okay, this guy is I know Maxwell uses this phrase. He loves saying that he's a generational talent, but I would say Bandito is right up there as well, man. He does some special, special things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Seeing him do these top row spots with Moxley in this match, that, the Spanish fly, type of maneuver where he has Moxley up in the slam and does the moonsault with him. Man, the one-handed slam on Moxley, just throwing him around like a ragdoll in some parts of this match. And then Moxley coming back and being ultra violent in a sense against Bandito, just ruthless, ruthless persona that he was playing on this one. And then after the match, the respect. Then we flip it right back to Moxley is back as a babyface.
He had that babyface turn immediately after the bell sounded.
Yeah. Lots of shades of gray going on right now with the Death Riders. And I love it. I think it's come across really well.
Yeah. I think that they are pulling off the tweener alignment very well. And actually, Rob Trump, I was watching this show with him. And we had a pretty interesting kind of back and forth during this match. I believe that the alignment, if you will, of the Death Riders would be akin to what you may see in Dungeons and Dragons as being the lawful evil class. So essentially having that, that framework of the rules and doing what's right, but doing whatever it takes to get their desired outcome. So I totally, I'm vibing with what they're doing for sure.
Yeah. It's an interesting shift. I don't ever know if they'll go back full heel at some point. I feel like it'd feel odd going to that, back to that. Well, and I just like this balance a lot better because it gives them a lot of variety on who they can pair him off with in the ring and the dynamics,
And that's the thing too, is keep in mind, they are it in many ways, it makes them the most real faction in AEW or let's be real too, anywhere. Because I know I'm totally lifting a line from Aleister Black's WWE theme, but no man is ever truly good. No man is ever truly evil. There are shades of gray that exist in real life that also don't always get translated into the pro wrestling world Right. And if people try to do it, it's not done well. But expertly done stuff by Moxley, by the Death Riders. Again, finding new wrinkles and new paths to pursue.
Yep, I am digging it 110%. And, you know, moving into, there was the other match with, I'm sure, Umino we can talk about in a moment, but the post-match on that was interesting with Moxley as well.
Yes.
I don't know where they're going with it. Were they going to set up a Moxley-Umino match, or is Moxley kind of going back to Umino as a, where are we going with it? I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, speaking of that match, Shota Umino versus Pac was next. And, you know, I said this to you right before we hit go live, and I'll say it right here. You know that you have a pretty damn good show when the quote unquote worst match on your show is Shota Umino versus Pac.
No kidding.
In this match, that's not a slight on either of these guys.
No kidding. Right.
But both of these guys brought it. They both did extremely, extremely good things. The Mike awesome bomb table spot was fucking sick. Yeah. I've got that graphic up there right now. Yeah. But Umino strikes, man. I'd say the most surprising thing for me is just how well those strikes translated here in AEW and how they elicited the response that they did from the AEW, largely AEW fan base. So good showing by Umino in the win here as well.
Yeah, he looked great. And I have to say, you know, he's come around.
Oh, dude.
There's been years of a build here and some underwhelming stuff, especially I remember some Tokyo Dome matches with him. That were really just underwhelming, and that chase that he had. But no, he has firmly solidified himself now. He feels like a top New Japan guy that can go in the ring and bring what they were expecting out of him maybe years ago. We're here now. And I feel like with the Tanahashi thing afterwards, that also was another step within it. Also was like, here's Tanahashi. He comes out. Don't really know what's up with that. And then he comes in and just endorses him wholeheartedly, essentially.
Yeah, completely endorses him. So obviously after the match, it's Continental Rules. So everybody's barred from ringside. After the match, you see the Death Riders en masse kind of circle around the ring. Moxley gets into the ring, and there's this kind of tension between he and Shota, who, keep in mind, Umino was the first Death Rider. He was the very first one that Moxley kind of took under his wing. So to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if we ended up seeing Umino versus Moxley, maybe at either Redemption, but I think at All In.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
That may be what they were hinting there.
And that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I think that it would be fitting if you did go ahead and, let's be real, have Umino beat Moxley. Here's why I say that is they did hammer home the point of no New Japan contracted wrestler has ever held an AEW title.
Right.
So they planted that seed, and AEW has been very good about following up on those seeds that they plant. And making sure that there's some sort of resolution.
Yeah, that could very well happen. That would be a great idea. And I'm interested to see where Umino goes in the G1 as well.
Yep.
That's coming up just like with Maloney. My impression also of this match was perhaps originally, was this going to be Gabe Kidd and Umino?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it was going to be him. But unfortunately, visa issues kept Gabe Kidd out of the country. So that's why you saw Gabe Kidd essentially being the message deliverer or the courier, if you will, to Umino for not just the challenge, but also, all of the promo stuff and the back and forths that we saw in New Japan kind of leading up to this match. So,
right. And I believe there's something even next week Are they there? I think I saw something where Gabe Kidd's working against Umanol on the road to the G1 or something. So they're going for it right away on the way back.
That makes sense. Yeah. And here's the image of President Tanahashi in there after he puts the belt around Umino's waist and again endorsing Shota Umino. So yeah, you love to see it, man. You love to see newer stars getting made, and it that's what this show can do.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I meant. Like when we were talking earlier about, you know, how the promotions came off in this show. I mean, yeah, like especially on the back end of the show, undoubtedly this was an AEW all the way. Those last three matches, but prior to that, there was a lot of shining of other promotions and New Japan talent and CML talent and Stardom talent intermixed in here, and this was a good example of it. I also liked that it was a nice touch. I don't know if you saw this on social media, but AEW presented Tanahashi with a bronze guitar.
Yeah. Yeah, a custom-made guitar.
Yeah, I thought that was very cool. And I really liked that.
Incidentally, I did find it pretty ironic considering what we just saw in, Juggalo Championship Wrestling last week that we talked about on the Sin City Indie Report. So
Maybe TK got an idea from Russo on that.
You never know, dude. That very well could have happened.
Yeah, but it's perfect for the old air guitar.
The old air guitar, yeah. So it makes all the sense. Yeah. So, but excellent stuff. And then speaking of championship matches and connections to Japan, we had Starlight Kid challenging Tekla for the AEW Women's World Championship. And realistically, man, this one went about as, you know, by the numbers as what you would think it would be. This one was another 18-minute match. Yeah. You have Tekla picking up the win. Starlight Kid looked great in defeat. And that's another thing is this is a name who has never appeared in AEW before. So this was a new face for a lot of these eyes. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, we did see the heel stuff come out at the end, you know, in the post-match with Tekla after getting the win, cutting the mask off of Starlight Kid's head. Mm-hmm. Thanks to Sky Blue and Julia Hart coming down there. And as she said she was going to do, she ripped the mask off a Starlight Kid, spit in it, and then rubbed it in President of Stardom Taro Okada's face. Yeah. And shout out to him for his bumps that he took. He took some bumps from a mask shot.
He did. Yeah, he sold that like a champion. My God.
It was like he got hit with a damn belt.
Yeah, like there was a brick in that freaking mask or something, man. Like, yeah, he went for it. All the way. I have to say overall on this show, thinking on the scope of things with the women, I thought the women matches overall on this show were much better than what you're used to seeing out of the women in general. This was an example of it. I thought
the women killed it from top to bottom.
Yeah, this was one of the better AEW women's championship matches I thought this year in general. I just thought this was had a little more heat than what I'm used to seeing with the title matches. I thought Tekla like paired off very well with Starlight Kid. Kid was showcasing her skills. Crowd was reacting appropriately. You had the story with President Okada in the mix of it. I was really into this one. Even at 18 minutes, I thought the pace of it was really strong, and it really put itself as, like I said, one of the better AEW women's title matches of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree, man. Yeah. Excellent showing by both of these women.
Yeah.
And you just know that this ain't over between Tekla and Stardom.
No. So, and will we get maybe a rematch over in Stardom maybe with these two? Where are they going to go? Is anybody's guess?
We could. And
the story's done yet. She took her mask. I mean, there's got to be something from that.
Shit's just getting started, bro.
Yeah. So let's see where it shakes out.
Yeah, I'm definitely intrigued as well. Mm-hmm. And elsewhere, we had another match with some Japanese connections as well in a title match. As we had the AEW World Tag Team Championship on the line, Christian Cage, Adam Copeland versus Clark Connors and David Finlay, the Daugs. And yeah, man, this match, it was a fun match. It was solid. These guys all beat the hell out of each other.
Yeah, but, they sure did.
But the thing that I'll say is this match will be overshadowed by what happened toward the end of the match. Mm-hmm. As yeah, we had a ref bump, and then we had Finley bust out the shillelagh, looked like he was going to wreak some havoc, and then the lights cut out, yep. And you see the Bang Bang Gang assembled at the top of the ramp, and they're not doing anything. Yep. They're not making a save. And then the lights dim again, and we hear the opening shrill of the yep. Switchblade Jay White theme song.
Finally.
And yeah, hallelujah. Welcome back, Jay White. King Switch is back.
Yeah.
It has been over a year since yeah. Jay White has been in AEW. But keep in mind who Jay White was aligned with when he was injured.
Yes.
He had made this kind of alignment with Adam Copeland. Mm-hmm. So this pays that off.
Yes.
But also, Jay White shows up to take out David Finley, who was instrumental in Jay White's removal from Bullet Club in New Japan Pro Wrestling in 2023.
Yeah, that's talk about multi-layered storytelling in the post-match here. It was really good.
I thought AEW didn't tell stories.
Right. Well, here we go. Yeah. I feel like we're about to dive in into that well of a storyline that never got really resolved
mm-hmm.
in Japan with the fallout of the Bullet Club and the leadership shifts and all that kind of stuff. Well, here we go. Now we're finally rolling back with we got all this talent in AEW now that we're intermixed in that storyline. So there's going to be some fun things ahead with it, I feel like. And boy, I popped like a motherfucker. When he finally returned, I've been waiting for months for King Switch to return, and sure as shit in the perfect spot. And the match was okay. I felt yeah. it was a little mediocre. On paper, I was not. I was like, again, like, why can't
you
we do a little
more
emotional? Yeah, it was going to be what it was going to be. But overall, you know, with that post-match, there was some meaning in what was happening by that angle at the end. So I can't dog it.
No.
Pardon the pun. Not at all.
Well played.
It was solid.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, of course there was some apprehension there between Christian Cage and Jay White too, as Jay White handed over those tag team titles to Cope and Christian. So
yeah. There's layers. Here we go.
Layers upon layers, my friend. Yeah. And up next, we had the first of our Owen Hart tournament finals matches, as we had Mercedes Moné going one-on-one with Maya World in the finals of the women's Owen Hart tournament. Bro, this match was one of the best women's matches in AEW this year.
Amen. Yeah. I was just talking about, you know, the Tekla match with Starlight Kid. And then here came Mercedes and My World of all people and tore it down. I mean, yeah, this was, I would say, the best women's match of the year.
Yeah.
At this point in the game, it was unreal. Mercedes Moné, man, say what you will about her at different times in her career and whatnot, but at this point in time, right here, right now, the last year or so, she is a talent elevator.
Absolutely, she is.
And this was just another example of it.
Yeah.
She made Maya World look like a absolute superstar in this one. And yeah, now we see where they're going to go post-match as well. Very clearly.
Yeah.
I think Maya World is on her way to get that title from Athena and to break that record of Athena.
Yeah. To be honest, I had that completely pegged for Billy Starks.
Yeah,
but if we think about it logically, okay, mm-hmm. As we roll into All In, by the way, again, the graphics team doing their thing. I loved this Mercedes Moné is All In graphic that they had.
Yeah,
and then, spoiler alert, they had the same one for Will Ospreay later on in the show as well.
Yeah.
But it's just the little things, you know, like, mm-hmm. They had the completely professional graphic made up. They truly made it feel like a big deal. And, you know, you mentioned that Mercedes made Maya World look fantastic, which she absolutely did. I think that it's very interesting, the position that Maya World has found herself in. You know, some people can, you know, make comments about, you know, her getting a sympathy push or whatever it is. But the fact of the matter is, the fans were 100% behind her.
Oh, yeah.
If you all are, you know, if you haven't checked out the show or maybe you just saw some clips, Maya World kicks out of the Monet Maker, and which at one point was used by Mercedes to put away everybody. That was her out and out finish.
Right.
And Maya kicks out of it at two. You hear the crowd pop because so this match actually went on for 24 minutes and 55 seconds.
Wow.
So this was the longest women's match in AEW history, by the way.
Oh,
so
no this, shit. Wow.
Yeah, so this was the longest women's match in history by a matter of less than a minute. But it deserved it. So not only was it one of the best that they've ever done, it was also the longest match in the AEW women's division history. But the more this match went on, you could tell the fans – got more and more behind Maya World, and they did what they needed to do to build a new star this match, but also leading up to this match. They created that emotional investment in Maya's character, and they set the table for her extremely well. She rose to the occasion and showed what she had. Obviously, there were, you know, a couple of miscues here and there, but you got to figure, man, for her to be put into this position this early into her career and for her to shine as much as she did, again, this was a star-making performance. Maya killed it. Mercedes killed it. Both of these women went out there, laid it all out on the line, and this is how you should finish a tournament like this. This match was the finals.
This match
lived up to those expectations and exceeded those expectations. It was phenomenal work by both women.
It sure was. Yeah, this year more than ever with this Owen Hart tournament, we saw just the most fantastic crescendos of both the men and the women's tournaments. I mean, these finals were, oh my God. I mean, compared to any of the other years prior, and we've had some good ones. We had that last year's one with Paige and Ospreay in the final. So we've had bouts of greatness in this tournament. But boy, oh boy, these last two finals on these ones and the way Maya World showcased her, she brought it. I mean, the push was, yes, it was quick, and it was the timing was right, and all the stars aligned. But it wouldn't have been possible to get the crowd into it without her effort as well.
Yes.
Since this match and the match with Athena, Maya World was not on the radar at all for me. Of like, this woman is just waiting for her opportunity to get, you know, she's going to take off and she's going to bring it. And I had my doubts, but man, I shouldn't have had any doubt because she really deserves what she's getting right now because she's really putting it out there and working her fucking ass off.
Yeah. She's earned the push that she's gotten.
Yeah.
The thing that I'll say is, I started to go into something and then went completely off on a different tangent. But anyway, as we go into All In, you know that Tekla is going to have the Triangle of Madness by her side. Yeah. So it would only make sense if Mercedes had two women by her side. Athena and Billy Starks make a whole hell of a lot of sense.
Sure does.
To be brought out to neutralize the Triangle of Madness.
Yeah. Yeah. I will definitely be looking forward to that six person tag. I'm sure they will build that into the mix.
It's got to happen.
All the sense in the world. Yeah.
It's got to happen. And as you had mentioned, immediately after the match, They had Athena and Renee kind of in the you know, in the bowels of the arena over by a an entrance, and they had Athena cut a rather scathing heel promo on Maya World. So as you said, yep, she's definitely taken that Ring of Honor Women's Championship. And this is, if they play this correctly, it's going to be very smart, because what you can do is you could very, very easily make a trade between your brands. And you can have Athena and Billy Starks move to AEW full time and send Maya World, by holding that women's championship and Hyon over to Ring of Honor.
There you go.
Have them kind of run things and do you know, give them carte blanche. Let them do whatever the hell they want to do.
Yeah.
And that will finally get Athena to the main roster.
Yep, that'll set it up for sure.
Finally.
Yeah. I even wonder if they will. It could even be the next pay-per-view. I don't know if they'll wait for the Ring of Honor next pay-per-view to do that switch. I think they'll do it at one of the AEW shows, you know, next month or All In. Maybe they even put it at All In, Athena and Maya World. We'll see.
That would make the most sense, honestly. Yeah, that would make the most sense. Have them do that and have that title change happen at the biggest show of the year.
Yeah, might as well. Yeah, let's go.
Hell yeah, man. And so then the third of our triple main, or I'm sorry, the second of our triple main event, excuse me, is the steel cage match between Team DC MJF and Team Briscoe. This one, I'm not going to lie, I was pretty geeked for this one when I saw that this was a rounded steel cage.
Yeah.
And yet again, a completely different cage style than what we've ever seen in pro wrestling. Granted, you could make some comments about how it's akin to, you know, something like an octagon or something like that, whatever. But I like the different look. It provides for a new kind of a, let's call it what it is, a new fresh coat of paint that they can use on these cage matches. And they're giving it an edgy name as well. They're calling it Death's Door. So obviously this is something that they're going to continue to do at Forbidden Door in the years to come.
Yep. It's going to be the new tradition of Forbidden Door. Yeah. So maybe, you know, down the road, we'll see some more, maybe interpromotional.
That's what I'm talking about right there. Yes. Yeah,
like an invasion angle to precede it. And then we get like a big grudge cage match between the promotions. I think that'd be freaking great.
Absolutely. And some of the spots in this match were just so fucking good, man. You had the Leo Rush spot, which, let's call it what it is, dude. When he popped out of that bag, he got one of the loudest pops all night long.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's over like a fucking rover, bro. Yeah. I tell you.
And you'll love to see it. Yeah. You'll love to see it. Side note, if you guys have not gone on and seen it yet, Leo Rush on Friday night wrestled against Shotzi Blackheart. It was Blackheart versus Blackheart at GCW America's Most Wanted. It was about 20 minutes, and it was fucking great. Absolutely the real main event of that show. No disrespect to anything else on that card, but that was without a doubt the show stealer. I highly recommend seeking that match out after you finish watching this recap and rant.
I am very much going to do that right after we get off this one. I have not watched that show yet, and
it's fucking fantastic.
Awesome. I figured that was going to be a good one. So.
Yeah, Blackheart versus Blackheart.
Awesome.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, so many uniquely creative moments in this match.
Oh, yes.
God, and the spots beyond, I mean, the pyro spot with Kevin Knight taking that dive. My God.
Yeah, dude. Kevin Knight blew himself up as Darby Allin dropped a backpack at the top of the cage after making his entrance and just left it up there. So it was obviously a planned spot for later on. Yeah. And Kevin Knight makes a move to the top of the cage and goes over to try to grab the backpack. And that sumbitch was booby trapped. So as you can see in the image, he eats a face full of sparks and it disorients him. He flies through not double stacks, but just the top layer of that double stack. Dude. And you got to imagine that shit hurt.
It looked rough. Yeah. Land the way that went.
Oh my God.
The table just kind of folded themselves over a little bit on the top level and kind of like busted out in a weird fashion. Yeah. It did not look pretty by any means.
No.
Dangerous bump all around. I mean, that's a hell of a, I don't know how high up that cage was, but it seemed quite elevated. I mean, 20 feet. I don't know
I'd say about 15, probably about 15 feet.
Yeah. But
nonetheless, they double stacked tables and put two stacks right next to each other. Kevin Knight took this bump and didn't get a good takeoff. So quite frankly, he just kind of fell as opposed to, you know, leaping with it and maybe kind of driving himself through.
Yeah.
I noticed that it was kind of off a little bit as he kind of fell. And so obviously I assumed the fucking worst, but thankfully he is okay. He went through just the top layer of those tables, crashing into that second layer of tables underneath. You know that did not feel good.
No kidding. Yeah. Darby also had a bump during the match.
Oh, God.
Was wild. I thought he got some fucking tacks in his eye.
In his eye. Yeah.
Oh my God. It was like, what? It was like a.
It was a back body drop.
That he just like.
It was a back body drop into thumbtacks that Mark Briscoe had left into the ring.
Yeah.
And he got back body dropped, but Darby rotated himself and instead of taking the back bump, rotated another 180 and took it face first. Quite literally face first into the tacks.
Yeah,
that was tough. You can even see on his face, he was like, oh shit, that didn't feel good.
Not at all. There was also the spot with Takeshita doing the power bomb spot. The blue thunder bomb into that table that exploded upon impact as well.
Yeah.
Oh, it looked like actually one of the legs of the table jammed his back. Down. Oh, that looked really fucking rough.
That was painful.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
My back hurt just from that spot alone. I was just like, shit.
And you know, elsewhere in this match, man, we did see the what we kind of had the seeds planted for. And again, I was watching a show with Rob Trump, and he made a comment, hey, why is Andrade still wearing a button-down shirt? And I was like, you know, that's a great fucking point. I wasn't even paying attention to that.
Right.
And obviously, as you can see in the bottom left of this image, Andrade had finally had enough of the bullshit from the Don Callis family and from MJF. He tears away his dress shirt to reveal a fuck Don, fuck MJF t-shirt, which I can only hope that they are going to put on shopaew.com because, yeah, it would definitely sell, to say the least.
You know they're going to fucking sell that.
They have to.
Yep.
They have to.
Yep. Now, the question is, where do you pencil in Andrade and MJF? Where does that go? It's coming up. You would think sooner than later. All in after All In? Or
no. No, because MJF's not going to have the title after All In. So
right, yeah, because you got to have him still with the title. I mean,
realistically, so we know that we're getting Mark Briscoe challenging this Wednesday.
Yeah.
I could easily see this being the go-home show for Redemption.
Maybe.
Or if you don't want to do that there, then maybe it's the week before. Sure. Right. So again, Redemption takes place on the 26th of July.
Mm-hmm.
So we have July 1st is Mark Briscoe's title match.
Mm-hmm.
There's also July 8th and July 15th that could be in place. So you could do it July 15th if you wanted to, so that way would even leave the 22nd, which is the go-home episode of Dynamite, to be setting the stage for that Redemption pay-per-view. To be honest, that the more and more I'm saying it and just throwing those numbers out there, I think that makes the most sense.
Yeah, that may be where they go. I was almost wondering too if they might do like a triple threat at the pay-per-view with Andrade, Omega, and MJF. I don't know if they will. well, I guess we'll find out, but
yeah,
there's a lot of different directions they can go with it, but I'm actually like pretty hyped for that match.
Yeah.
I thought it's been built pretty well through this Don Callis, you know, kind of shifting and of everything. So
yeah. Andrade has really come into his own. You know, you can say whatever you will about his time in WWE, even his first stint in AEW, but this current run that he's on, he's doing some of the best, if not the best stuff that he's done since he was NXT champion.
Absolutely. Yeah. I really like the character he's playing right now. And yeah, there's just something about him that his charisma level's through the roof right now too.
It's awesome. It's impressive. Awesome to see too.
Something, yeah, for sure.
And the cage match did come down to Mark Briscoe hitting Jake Doyle with the J Driller, who they spent all match long building Jake Doyle up to be this mean asshole badass. Mm-hmm. So obviously, you knew with him doing so many spots in this match that he was probably going to be the one to eat the pin. But yeah, everything looked good. If nothing else, even in defeat, Jake Doyle looked good in defeat. I think that this was a match that had every right to not be as good as it was. This was a lot of this was a spot fest. But I mean, you know, you had unconventional things used. You had Kyle O'Reilly's weapon of choice being a gold Nintendo Entertainment System and wired controls. That was fucking awesome. I popped like a motherfucker for that.
With barbed wire around the controllers.
Yes.
That was a cool touch.
Absolutely, man. It was good. And you know, you have the fun that the conglomeration brings, but yeah, they tend to show that these cage matches, they tend to do pretty well in them too.
For sure. Now, I think I enjoyed this one to compare to Double or Nothing. I enjoyed this match a little bit more than the Spring Stampede match.
Yes.
From Double or Nothing, which I thought was awesome in its own right. But this was just whoever laid this match out with the guys. Wow. I mean, so many spots of note. And just this, the structure itself was a presence. I think I mentioned it to you that one thing I could say is I wish AEW would have been able to promote that a little bit more ahead of time.
Yes.
That they had this cool ass circular cage. It's going to be debuting at this show. Cause I thought leading into this show that somehow we were going to have 12 guys brawling inside of a ring in a cage.
God, and like how wouldn't that have been a nightmare?
Yeah. How are we going to do this? But no, this was a great addition, a great new theme and a great new type of thing. We're going to be seeing every year at Forbidden Door. I can't wait for the next one.
Hell yeah, dude. And you know, the main event of the night was Swerve Strickland versus Will Ospreay. And Jed, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. This is the match of the year in AEW, maybe all across professional wrestling up to this point. That mask versus mask match in AAA, I think it's neck and neck with that, but it depends on which flavor of ice cream that you like.
True.
You know, that's going to tell you which one that you like better.
Right.
But this match, dude, this match absolutely crushed it. These dudes went 35 minutes.
Wow.
And it didn't feel like it was over 20 minutes.
Not at all.
this
was so good. So good. I haven't seen storytelling like this in a match probably since the Omega and Okada series.
Yeah.
Frankly, the chapter telling that they were doing within a context of 40 minutes was incredible. I mean, even before the match started, just the story that the announcers were playing up too of the past 10 years of the history with these guys and the different waves that they took and the different positioning that they were at and you know, previous encounters. I even came to, just as this match started, thinking about, I think it was 2000, and it was when we were in New Orleans for WrestleMania 34, I think it was. And Ospreay and Swerve Strickland were on opposite ends of a tag match through like a Rev Pro show. And yeah, just looking back at the history of that, I mean, that was
2018.
We're talking 8 years ago as well on that. So that was part of that bridging 10 years with these guys. And yeah, man, I was, I just saw this tonight. I just finally watched this match. And I had heard the hype the last 24 hours. Oh, this was a phenomenal match, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, we'll see. We'll see what I think about it. But, man, it blew me away. I was so utterly impressed with this match as it went on. Like I said, the chapters, the layers, the levels, whatever you want to call it in this match, it just kept building and building. The heavy blood in this match was...
Oh, my God. Swerve was fucking bleaking, bro.
Oh, it looked like a murder scene over there by that steps in that table spot that they did. It was just fucking blood spots everywhere. Yeah. This match was killer. And I'm with you after watching it. I think this was not only the best AEW match of the year, it would be right above Takeshita and Okada from the last pay-per-view as an example. This took it for sure. I would call it probably the best match of the year, bar none, out of any promotion at this point, just because of where we got to at the end of the match, too. Just like I said, it was all about the story.
Yes.
The Death Riders coming out at the end to kind of motivate him to turn it into that other level. Like when
that was so fucking cool.
Yeah.
That was really cool. Dude, and if by some chance, you didn't see the show, definitely seek out, especially if you don't have the 35 minutes, first off, make the time because it's worth it. But if you absolutely can't, the last 10 minutes of this match,
oh my God,
if you tell me that you can't tell a story in the confines of a professional wrestling ring, I will point you in the direction of this match.
Yes.
Because they told one hell of a story throughout this match, but especially in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah. And the levels of attrition in this match. I mean, to just call this match a war of attrition would be an understatement. But it was that level of just a epic encounter, if you've ever seen one in the confines of AEW and especially a Forbidden Door. This was the best. And we've had great Forbidden Door history. We've had Ospreay and Omega in a classic. We've had Brian Danielson and Okada in yet another classic as well. So there's been plenty of history with Forbidden Door matches, but I think this was the best match in Forbidden Door history as well. I'm just going to put it out there. And that's a high mark.
Yeah, without a doubt. And, they've been doing this event since 2022, so they've got 5 years in this shit. And it's, I would agree with you, man. This was special. This match was special, and it was a perfect capstone to a fantastic, fantastic pay-per-view.
Yep, and I think I'll go right back to Double or Nothing one more time. And we felt a certain way about that show. One of the best AEW pay-per-views ever. And again, I'm trying not to be hyperbolic in any sense of the fashion here, but this was just as good as Double or Nothing. And dare I say, it may be a little bit better than Double or Nothing because you had that main event.
Yes.
Compare that with MJF and Darby, which was also a fantastic match in its own right.
It was.
It wasn't the match of the year candidate we got here as a main event finale of a show that top to bottom brought it.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah.
And, as you had mentioned, the Death Riders out there, they hoist Will Ospreay up on their shoulders, Moxley and Claudio, as Will's holding the Owen Hart cup itself. And then behind Will, you see the Will Ospreay is all in graphic. As he's holding the title, you have his new wife, his new bride, Alex Windsor, come out there and celebrate with him. You gotta love this entire thing, it's all right there. Will Ospreay is gonna be bringing it home. He's gonna be going to Wembley. He's gonna be challenging whoever the AEW World Champion is, and quite frankly, he's going to be taking that championship off of whoever walks into Wembley Stadium.
Absolutely. And I personally just want to see Omega, and I want to see Ospreay. I want to see that rematch from Forbidden Door. It's been years in the making. This is the place. This is the time. Let's go. I think MJF has had a great run. I think there's a place at All In for him and maybe Hangman Adam Page if yep. he would return in a final grudge match between those guys. So everything could line up really well for All In on that level. We'll see where they go, but that's my personal pick. I'm fine with a triple threat with MJF, Omega, and Ospreay as well. If we need to go there on that level, fine. But I just feel like the money match, the final, if there's going to be a match that may overtake this match here, that we're ranting and raving about, it might be Ospreay and Omega one more time.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. We shall see. Yeah. But, I think that it's painfully apparent that this Dave Meltzer quote did not hold true, because everybody on this show, yeah, they left it all out there.
They held back on a lot of what they could do.
Yeah, you got to love that. You got to love that.
Indeed.
Yes, so, sir. But, as we start to wrap up, I just want to go over to you, Jed. Talk to the fine people out there. Tell them where they can follow you on social media. And, let's build up that channel and let's drive some traffic.
For sure, man. Yep. Red Jed's Wrestling Rants is on the YouTube. Super Red Jed is the handle. Since we're talking Forbidden Door, do y'all a favor and check out Wrestling Rants and go back to the archives where there are clips from the first Forbidden Door event. Yes. So that is on our channels for sure. Clips from that first event. We had great seats for that first Forbidden Door.
Hell yeah, we did.
Center right there, man. It was a great experience. And I thought a lot about it last night when I was watching the show. And again, this event tonight or last night was just like the best Forbidden Door pay-per-view I think they've ever done.
Yeah.
Even though that first one holds a lot of sentimental value to me. But yeah, so check it out on Wrestling Rants, clips from Forbidden Door back in the day. And also coming up this week, we're going to be doing that mid-year look back at what a year 2026 has been already. So check that out July 4th weekend on Wrestling Rants. Sin City Steve will be joining me for that. And we also got the Sin City Indie Report coming up probably. I'm down for Thursday night if you are, brother.
All right, man. Yeah, we'll make it happen. So. Absolutely. Thursday night, we're going to be doing the Sin City Indie Report where, the both of us, we do what we just did for a little over an hour, except we don't just talk one show. We talk a ton of shows. So the best in independent pro wrestling, numerous promotions, it's all out there. And quite frankly, if you're listening to this, if you're watching this, and you're affiliated with an independent promotion, if you are an independent wrestler yourself, or if you're a content creator, whether you focus on independent wrestling or the big brands, whatever, we'd love to collab. So feel free, reach out to us, and we would love to do collaboration stuff with any of you guys. So absolutely. Feel free to reach out to us. But I do want to just say right before we dip out of here, thank you for hanging out with us tonight. Thank you for liking, sharing, subscribing, doing all the stuff that you guys do. We appreciate each and every one of you. Also, a very special thank you to all the brave men and women serving this country. Whether you're doing it on lands foreign or domestic, thank you for doing what you do so that we can do what we love to do. And last but not least, repsports.com, REPPsports.com. Go there for all your pre-workout, weight loss, and general energy needs. Repsports.com. Use promo code Vegas at checkout and save yourself 10%. Let's slam that Forbidden Door before we have too much extra bullshit that gets through, right, Jed?
Right, yeah.
All right, guys. Well, until next time, we will see you next time.
Yeah.
Did any of you have a great time tonight?
Yeah. With that, everybody, thank you for hanging out. We'll do it all again next week. Till then, happy wrestling.
rolling up the strip under neon lights. Podcast mics glowing in the desert night. Matt and Michael's leading with the swagger tights. Sin City Steve right by his side. All right. Rob Buccellari dropping truths, no fear. Broadcasting stories, make it loud and clear. From the Fremont edges to the Bellagio sphere. These bad boys rule, let me make that clear. Vegas bad boys, tearing up the scene.
To Matt Michaels and the Vegas Boys of Podcasting, this is John Cena saying thank you so much.